Well, hello and welcome back to our study of the Corinthian letters. I'm Bob. Today we're in chapter 9. Chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians of the Apostle Paul, part 16 in our ongoing commentary series. It looks like we have a different chapter, and we do in the Bible, but in fact, not a different subject. Paul's been talking about liberty in chapter 8. Here's a place where he probably shouldn't have had a chapter break, just a break, because he really starts going into talking about liberty that he has used, as opposed to just liberty in general versus love. Paul is a free man. You wonder, why does he start saying this kind of stuff? Am I not free? Well, what's he talking about? He's back in chapter 8. Verse 13, if food causes my brother to stumble, I'll never eat meat again, so that I'll not cause my brother to stumble. Am I not free? See, there's a flow there. As he's writing this letter, it all starts coming back to him, all the things that he has been doing to demonstrate to them what liberty is about. Chapter 8 is the theory, and it's good theory. But here's Paul saying, I've done this. I'm free. Look at me. You want an example of liberty? Take a look. I'm not only free, I'm an apostle. I have authority from Christ. I've seen Jesus Christ. But some people want to put that fact with the apostle fact and say that that's a qualification for being an apostle. I kind of think that's true, but not necessarily from this text. He's just giving a string of things here that shows his liberty and his rights. Here's a man who's... In the way we look at things, he's at the top of the totem pole. He's number one. He's way up there. He's free. He's an apostle. He's seen Jesus. How many people did you know have seen Jesus and been up in heaven, in paradise? Actually, an apostle of Jesus Christ. Do you know somebody like that? Chances are you don't. You might think you do. Are you not my work in the Lord? He's saying, you are the proof, and he says it in verse 2. Other people might not think I'm an apostle. Now, I know I've got a lot of detractors there at Corinth. Don't even think I'm an apostle. I've heard it in other places here. After, you know, they're talking about they got 12 apostles, and then Judas was killed himself, and then Matthias replaces him, and there aren't going to be any more apostles, and so I'm not an apostle, some people are saying. Well, if others don't think I'm an apostle. I know you do, because you are the seal of it. You've seen what apostleship can do. You've seen the power in me. You've seen that I did the same kind of things among you that Jesus Christ would have done. The power of God was all over me. I did stuff in your midst. I showed you authority, discipline, and told you my story. Well, you know that I'm an apostle because you know that Jesus called me to be. You're my seal. What has happened inside of you, the gifts that you have received, that you are even operating in now in that church, well, that's proof that I am an apostle. I have liberty. And those people, verse 3, that are trying to examine me, where's that come from? Comes way back at chapter 4, remember? Chapter 4, verse 3. To me, it's a very small thing that I may be examined by you. He realized there were people there who were checking him out and had come out to some unfavorable conclusions about him. And he says, I have a defense to that. I have rights, too. Look at verse 4. He says, I don't do some of the things that they do. I don't do some of the things you would expect me to do. But I'm still an apostle, and I have rights, and I have authority. And those who are examining me need to look at this. Here's my defense. I have a right, I have liberty to eat whatever I want to eat. And he doesn't mean bad food or poison. He's talking about this context of chapter 8. If I want to go into one of those temples, and I want to sit down and eat my fill of food that was sacrificed to idols, I can do that. I'm allowed to do that. If there was drink that was sacrificed to them, I can drink that too. I have liberty, as I just said that you have liberty. Hey, I've got more than that. You see me as a single man. You're thinking that I have to stay single. I don't have to stay single. Not at all. I can have a wife, like all the rest of the apostles have, like James and Jude, the brothers of the Lord. They all have their wives. I'm not against that. I think that's wonderful. I showed you in chapter 7. I'm using chapter 7 here. He didn't use chapter 7. They had no chapters up until relatively recently. But these people all had wives. And I've already told you in my discussion in this letter that marriage is a good thing. I could be married. Peter was married. They're almost all married. Nothing wrong with marriage, but I'm not. I have a right to do this, but I haven't done it. You don't understand why yet. I'm going to tell you. What about taking offerings? What about being on a salary? What about coming to your church and saying, I need some help financially? I can do that. I have every right in the world to do that. You know, and sometimes he did, although most of the time when he collected money, it was for others. No, we have a right to work, Barnabas and I both. I mean, to not work. We have a right to take offerings. And then he goes off into a little bit of a demonstration of that to explain what he's talking about. For several verses here, he's defending the right of men of God to take offerings, to live off the people. And I don't say that in any derogatory way at all. I was trying to think of a way to say it better. But you have a right. Well, let me just put it in his words. If you were a soldier, I mean, verse 7. If you were a soldier, and you were out there on the battlefield, would you have to go weekends working at a Kmart? I mean, I'm trying to put it in modern terms here, but would you have to go working somewhere? No, the military's going to take care of you. It's obvious when you're in that kind of war, you can't stop and go get a job somewhere. What about the person who has a vineyard and wants to drink some of that wine and eat some of that jam that comes from the grapes? Well, of course he can do that. It's his vineyard. He's free. What about the shepherd? Can't the shepherd enjoy the products of the sheep, the wool? And the, you know, of course. It's just common sense. Silly talk, right? I'm not speaking these things according to human judgment. I didn't make all this up. Doesn't the law say this too? I don't have to use human illustrations as my authority. Let's go to the law of Moses. And he turns in his Bible, as you could, and see this yourself, Deuteronomy 25, verse 4. It says right there, you shall not muzzle the ox while he's threshing. What's that mean? He's out there doing his work, doing your work for you. He has a right to eat as he goes along. Yeah. Don't muzzle him. Wouldn't that be an awful thing? To put a muzzle on this animal so he can't even have any of that grain, any of that stuff that he's doing? Any fruit of that? Oh my, what an awful thing. But wait a minute, he says, God's not talking about oxen, is he? That's verse 9. God's not talking about oxen here. When the law was given in Deuteronomy 25. Sure, God cares about animals, but that's not what this was written about. That's not the point of this law. The point was that people who today, who are out on that battlefield, or out in that vineyard, out on that farm, they have a right to eat what comes naturally to them. Yeah, he's speaking this, verse 10, for us. He wrote this down in his law for us. Because the plowman ought to plow in hope. Why would a plowman, unless he's an employee, why would a farmer who owns all that land out there on his tractor every day, why would he be doing all that stuff if he's not going to get something out of it? Sure, he's going to sell it. He's going to get lots of money from it, but he's also going to be able to eat whatever he wants to eat there too. It's his. He did all that work. He has hope. At the end, it's going to be a great harvest, going to be a great profit, and great food all winter long. That's his hope. That's what he lives for in the natural.
Of course.
And the thresher should have that same hope. So if we sow spiritual things, if we're out here on the battlefield every day, if we're out here sowing crops, spiritual crops, sowing into your hearts the very word from heaven, so that you can live forever and live here as you ought to live. If we're giving you all of that, we're giving you life itself. Don't we have a right to have a ham sandwich now and then at your table, the table of the church? Isn't it okay if you take an offering from me and let me live so that I can just keep doing this all the time, like the original apostles there in Jerusalem said, we're going to give ourselves to the word of God in prayer. And God was not against that. That was a good thing that they did. But Paul said, not for me. Not for me. Verse 12. If others share this right over you, and people were coming through town, and we're not being told here how many of them were deserving. Now, not everybody who calls themselves a minister has the right to be receiving funds from you. So many of the people who are asking for money from you online and on the air and on TV, they shouldn't be getting your money. You need to examine those folks. Do you know who you're giving to? I'm not saying you shouldn't give to any of them, but do you know those people? Do you know who is laboring for you in that way? Do they have good reports? But he says other people are doing this. Other people are coming through and you're giving them cash and sending them on their way. Why not me? Why not us? Because we never used this right. We haven't married. We haven't sat in those temples I was talking about. We haven't put our hands out for a collection. Why? So that we'll cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. Now, he just said all this stuff is okay. I have a right to do it. But I know, Paul says, how people are. There will be people coming along saying, I'm in this for the money. There will be people who are coming along saying, hey, you got a pretty girl out of this. You got a regular family. You got everything going for you. Everything's just great for you. Yeah, you haven't given up anything for the gospel. Paul was already criticized on every front. We don't want to cause any hindrance to the gospel. We don't want anything to stop the gospel's flow. We just want to be out here being used of the Lord, being free to be a vessel that God can use, and we don't want to take anything for ourselves. What an attitude. That's not just a platitude. That's how he lived. That was his life. How many that you know today live that way? Do you live that way? What do we get out of the gospel? Again, he says it's okay to be married. It's okay to take money if you're in a situation like he was in particular. There are many pastors who probably don't need to go get a job, and it's okay. It'd be better for them because they're draining their church, or they're not really doing that much. I say some. I only say some. I have nobody in mind when I'm talking like that, but I do know there are some guys who really don't do a whole lot except prepare a message. They've got other people doing different stuff in the congregation. They're not into evangelism. They're not into most anything except preaching on Sunday, and they're getting a pretty hefty salary for that. Oh, they might visit a sick person now and then if it becomes necessary. We got too many people who are on the take. Paul was on the opposite extreme of this. He had the right to be on the take, but he didn't take it. What? We're just going to let that phone go, by the way. What a man. What a godly example. Just a moment.
You've reached Bob, Dion, and George M. Please leave a message. Thanks.
All right, well, we got that done. Are you there? All right, you're still there. I'm glad you're still there. I'm so sorry for this. I forgot to turn the phone off. I don't want to go back and do this teaching again. I'm right in the middle of it. If we sow spiritual things to you, is it too much if we reap material things? If others share that right, don't we more? Nevertheless, we don't use the right But we endure all things so that we'll cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. Don't you know? Don't you know? That though, and he uses that phrase, I meant to check this out for you. You can check it yourself. Do you not know? Many times he uses that, and it's like, here are the Corinthians, the Greeks, who were big on knowledge, you know, that knowledge was everything, and John had to do this too. He's talking about knowledge. He said, don't you know? Don't you know? I mean, there's some things that we ought to know, right? And they didn't know it. Why didn't they know it? They should have known this, what he's about to say. Don't you know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple? Right? If you were a Jewish priest, you killed those sacrifices, that food was yours. We talked about that already. And so, again, it's just these one example after another. You got the law, you got this obvious stuff in nature and in life. I have a right to eat these things. I have a right to share. But I'm not going to take that right. The Lord, verse 14, has directed those who proclaim the gospel to get their living from the gospel. I guess each person's going to have to decide where he stands in this regard. A man who is totally, I mean, unable, because he's in another country or whatever, that person, unable to work, that is, but he's preaching and preaching and teaching, that person deserves our help. As I said earlier, there's people who really don't deserve our help because they could help themselves so easily here, and it wouldn't hurt their ministry at all. But I've used none of these things. Verse 15, I have used none of this. He builds this case about liberty again. This whole first half of the chapter, he's saying, I'm free, I'm free, I'm free. And we're all free. We all have this knowledge and we have this freedom, but in both chapters, love limits liberty. I've used none of this, and I'm not writing this to drop some kind of a hint, you know, and there's people who would do something like this. I'm not writing these things so that you'll go take an offering and feel sorry for me. Don't you dare. I'd rather die. He really says this. I'm in verse 15. I'd rather die than somebody make my boast an empty one. Now, he's made it clear in other places that when we boast or glory, it's to be in the Lord and in spiritual things. He's not a proud man in this case. He's not boasting about himself or anything that he's done. But his glory is in the Lord. You got to always get that in the background when you're talking about Paul and his boasting. But he says, I would have a ground for boasting if, or I wouldn't have a ground for boasting if you would start sending me money. I mean, I would just kill everything. You'd take my reward away. No, please, keep the money. And then he gets into a few verses here that have been a little bit confusing to some through the years. Let's see if we can figure this out. He says, if I preach the gospel, and he did, he was preaching the gospel. If that's what I do, if that's all that I'm doing, if I'm just preaching the gospel, nothing to boast about there, because I'm being told to do that. I'm under compulsion. I have to preach the gospel. God told me to do it. I guess there are some that just went out and preached the gospel. God never gave them an audible voice. God, maybe their motivation was all wrong, and they're just out preaching the gospel. But Paul said, no, I'm not any of that. I'm under orders. I've got to preach. In fact, if I don't preach it, I'm going to be in big trouble. But if I do this thing voluntarily, I have a reward. If I was a volunteer, God wasn't telling me to do it. If I was a volunteer, I have a reward. You know, when you volunteer to do things, you expect a pat on the back or something. Maybe you'll get a cash prize. You know, there's different things you can get for volunteering to do things. And he says, I'm doing this against my will. I don't want to really do this in one sense. I mean, he had a joy for sure in his heart because of Christ. But this was a command from heaven. It's not my will. And I would imagine there were mornings he got up and didn't want to go out and do anything, but he did anyway. He got up. He had such persecution, such trouble, but he kept going because he knew, God's telling me to do this. I don't have a choice. And if I'm doing it against my will, it's because I have a stewardship, a job, a responsibility. So he's choosing between reward and responsibility. You go for the reward. No, you go for the responsibility. Paul says it's against my human will, so I have a stewardship. I have a responsibility that's entrusted to me. That's why I'm out there doing that. So what do I get out of it? What is my reward? Verse 18. Well, when I preach the gospel, when I'm out there doing what God wants me to do anyway, the one joy that I can take out of this, the human joy, you could say, that I'm really getting out of this, is that I can do it all free. I can do it all free. And nobody's going to be able to come and criticize me because I'm doing it for money. I'm not making use of my full right in the gospel. I have every right in the world to receive all these good things, but I'm not making use of it. That's my joy. That's a strange sense of joy, isn't it? That's a strange sense of having fun in the world. What do you do for fun? Paul went out and preached the gospel freely. It wasn't just that he preached it and he got paid for it. There's not a whole lot of joy in that. That's a job, a human job. But he went out and received nothing for it, except for the fact that he received nothing for it. That was his joy. What a man. And this man's kind of strange, isn't he? Strange in a wonderful way. Strange to us. But he's not supposed to be unusual. We're supposed to be patterning our life after men like this, and of course, the one that he patterned his life after. Because even if I'm free, verse 19, from all people, I am free. You can't tell me what to do. I'm an apostle. You can't tell me I can't get married. The other apostles are married. I'm free. But though I'm free, I've made myself a slave to all, so that I can win more people to Jesus. This is a different world, isn't it? Different world. To the Jews, and he enumerates now the ways that he has done this. To the Jews, I became like a Jew. I wanted to win Jews to Christ, so I had to be one of them. Never compromised who I am, but I could become very Jewish, because I am Jewish. Remember when Timothy was with him? He had just met Timothy, and he takes Timothy out to get him circumcised, not so Timothy could be saved. He made it very clear that circumcision has nothing to do with salvation, but he didn't want the Jews in that area to be offended. He wanted them to think that Timothy was one of them, so Timothy could keep on preaching, doing whatever he needed to do. So the Jews would be influenced. But then there were people under the law. Well, that's the same as the Jew in one sense. I became like people under the law. Remember when they started accusing him about the circumcision thing? Now, he wasn't going to give in on that argument, but he was called to Jerusalem, to the Jewish apostles there, who were trying to do what God wanted them to do, and they were getting confused about the whole law thing, too. And Paul just went up there and submitted to them, to these people who felt they had to be under the law. But he wouldn't go under the law, but he was submitting to the apostles. He spoke with them, probably argued a little with them, but still he went there and faced them. He didn't just try to go out on his own. He was under law, even under Jewish law, as much as he could be, because he wanted to win Jewish people and legal people. Even, I suppose, he would like to have won Pharisees to the Lord. But I myself am not under the law. Not under the curse of the law. But verse 21, even those people who are outside the law, I was as one of them, because you remember the Timothy story, but do you remember the Titus story? Titus was not compelled to be circumcised. They were trying to get him to be circumcised, to be saved, and Paul would not yield to that. No, Titus wouldn't yield to it. So these are people without law, and he's teaming up with the Gentiles here, saying, no, you don't need to be circumcised. Even though I'm not without the law of God, he was not saying I'm antinomian, I'm against the law. Oh, no way. But he knew how to relate well to the Gentiles, because the Gentiles were going to be saved through grace, just as the Jews had been saved through grace. The law would not be their salvation. He understood that. To the weak, I became weak. Now, that's back in chapter 8. He could just say, just read chapter 8 if you want to see how I feel about weak people. People who have a weak conscience. People who are babies in Christ. I have a compassion for them. I'm willing to become like them. I won't do anything that would harm them in any way. Like he says at the end of verse 8, if food would cause my brother to stumble, I would never eat meat again. So to the weak, he becomes weak, so that he can win weak people to the Lord, and to strengthen weak people who are in the Lord. I become everything to everybody, because I want to win people. We got this attitude about us sometime that makes us feel, makes people feel like we really want to push them off. Like we want to give them a real hard, harsh presentation of the gospel, hoping they won't accept it, and then we can go off and say how bad these people are in the world today, how they don't want anything to do with Jesus, and we go off feeling self-righteous. But have you really tried to win them by becoming a part of their life just a little bit? I'm not talking about so-called friendship evangelism. You can go ahead and tell them the truth from the beginning, but you can tell them the truth in love. In love. In compassion for them. I do all things for the sake of the gospel, so that I can become a fellow partaker of it, fellows with you. I want to join with you. I want to enjoy this gospel that I'm preaching to you. So you know what? Instead of just preaching it, I'm going to live it. I'm going to live it to the max. And when we hear Christians today talking about living life to the max, I think they're talking about the flesh. I think they're talking about the liberties they have in the flesh, which they don't have, by the way. Those liberties will kill. Those liberties will make you slaves again. We're talking about liberties in the spirit here, and liberties among things that God has said is okay. And the fruit of the spirit. Paul enjoyed the Christian life. Paul enjoyed the message he was preaching, and he lived it, and he got all the more joy out of it. I want to become a fellow partaker of the gospel with you. The gospel is good news. I have found it to be good, he says, because I live this kind of life, and I'm a happy man. You wouldn't think he would be if you would just look at his bio and look at all the stuff. You wouldn't think he'd be a happy man, but he was. He wanted that gospel. We're going to finish up the chapter next time. We don't have time now. I want to read to you next time about the races, the Roman races that Paul talks about. He almost changes the subject here, but not really. In these last four verses, he kind of sums up everything he's talking about. And we'll get to that next time. It's good that you could join me today. So sorry for that interruption in the middle. I have to remember to unplug the phone from now on, right? By God's grace, we will continue soon. Be sure to read ahead in the text. We're in chapter 9, 24 on, Lord willing, I'm sure we'll get on to chapter 10 next time. We're moving right along through this book. It's a wonderful book. There's more wonderful things coming along. By the way, I've written and recorded many other teachings on sermon audio. I invite you to check them out. God bless you today. Bye-bye.